Billy Bragg. Billy.
It might have been Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline, but on the Jaguara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over luxury's disappointment, so he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her, but he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner. In the Soviet Union, scientist is blinded by the resumption of nuclear testing, and he is reminded that Dr. Robert Oppenheimer's optimism fell at the first hurdle.
Hi, Biter.
Yes? Oh.
I'd like you to meet Hoppy Oppenheimer.
Oh.
He'll kind of give you a ringside blow by blow, all right?
Glad to meet you, sir.
What did you say? Take out your earplugs, sir.
Your earplugs?
Oh, there we are. Yes, well, Dr. Oppenheimer, I'm glad to meet you. It's a pleasure. Yeah.
Call me Hoppy, sir.
No.
Very glad to meet you. I seldom go to the movies, Mr. Tyabutter, but the president showed me one of your pictures at the White House when I was a guest in 43.
Really?
Get our minds off the damn war, he said.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
We all had martinis, and I'm afraid Mrs. R. might have slept through the last part, but the president especially liked that song about bringing the war back home.
Oh, yes, bringing the war back home. And lots of chorus girls. Yes, it was wonderful.
I've been told you're Mr. Pingo's special representative. Mm-hmm. I hope you'll be able to figure a way to get us thing out of the hands of the military and let young Americans get a listen to it.
Well, I thought this was our ultimate secret weapon, Doctor.
That can only be used against people, sir. I never wanted this. My interest in sonic reinforcement was always strictly theoretical. Uh-huh. A question of fundamental research. I always liked sound, Mr. Tyabiter. Sound and arithmetic. If I showed you a diagram for that thing out there, you would not have the faintest idea what it could do.
No.
90% pure arithmetic, 10% magnetism.
Really?
General Bully found out some of the boys and I were working on this thing, and he convinced us that without it, we'd lose the Cold War.
Oh.
The urge to find out if our arithmetic could be made to have a material form to walk like a man, if you see what I mean.
Oh.
Well, I regret to say it was too great a temptation for us, and we built it.
Really? Well, sounds like the story for a great movie someday, the Whopper and the Tweety, huh?
There you go,
could
there
be.
You go.
Well,
ten.
Nine. Be. Is this it?
This is it.
Well,
eight,
good luck.
You better put those earplugs back in,
seven,
sir.
Do that.
Six. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
The cheese pavilion, and the only noise I hear is the sound of someone stacking chairs and mopping up spilled beer, and someone asking questions and basking in the lights of the 15 fine-filled minutes of the fanzine writer. Mixing pop and politics, he asks me what the use is. I offer him embarrassment and my usual excuses while looking down the corridor out to where the man is waiting. I'm looking for the great leap forwards. One leap forwards, two leaps back. Will politics get me the sack? Waiting for the great leap forwards. If you've got a blacklist, I want to be on it. It's better than a Grammy with my name on it. Waiting for the great leap forwards. If no one out there understands, start your own revolution and cut out the middleman. Waiting for the great leap forwards. As Rusty proves, you have to be very careful. Those who burn books will later burn people.
We don't do anything with the leaves. We burn them.
They
in
burn
fact,
the
that's
leaves.
That's how little we think of them.
We make books of them, and then we burn them. You burn whole books of them at
you
one time.
You can make books on the burnings.
Yeah, you're right. You can get 5-1, 6-1. You can get 10 to life if you're not careful.
But you can get really stoned, too.
And badly burned, man.
Lighting for the grike leaf-borners. Well, it's all very well deciding you're sorry, but I really don't believe you, Ollie. Lighting for the grike leaf-borners. And it's a mighty long way down rock and roll from each Berlin to the Letterman show when you're waiting for the great leaf-borners. So join the struggle while you may. The revolution is just a t-shirt away. Waiting for the great leaf-borners.
Where are you taking?
We don't have much time, and there's a lot you have to know.
Now listen carefully. If the revolution is to be successful,
excuse me.
Wait, first
but,
thing, but
what,
there's
no,
the revolutionary leadership.
No, no, I was talking about the codification. The codification is the central control.
Wait, top secret.
Do you want to talk about pressure?
Yeah, I was. No, the product.
Don't
protocol
tell
situation.
Yet.
Let me. All right, you mind? All right, go ahead.
Fine.
I
just want to tell you about expediency.
According to the regulation,
check.
Right, everything has got to be done in this time.
We have to have the priority of rank.
Right.
Do you mind if I...
Go.
Of course.
There is absolute security necessity.
Got it.
All of these operations.
I'll take it from here. Follow me.
Right, Chief.
As I'm getting the track going, I realize that the riff sounds like that French police siren. At that time, Paris was up in flames. And
the Oz Fire Sign Theater, in cooperation with
the Belgian Radio and Television Service,
das Deutsche Rund- und Blaupunktgesellschaft,
the All India Radio Pakasab Blue Network,
el Radio Servicio Internacional,
the BBC Home Service, and the BBC Tea Service.
Ici Paris, Radio Diffusion Française.
All people, Radio Free People's Republic. Peking Radio.
And Out of Sight Radio in Los Angeles, KPFK.
Presents International Youth on Parade. The world today is in a peck of trouble. Disrespect and turmoil are everywhere. From Maine to California, across the wide blue oceans, on continents all over the wide world, in far and widely distant lands, wherever the sun shines, there is disrespect and turmoil. And everywhere where there is disrespect and turmoil, there is youth. International Youth on Parade. Well, folks, here we are in Paris, land of the Eiffel Tower. A significant group of French students have gathered here under the beautiful Arc de Triomphe to protest the state of international youth. And I have with me the spokesman of the group.
I am Jean Turmoil, and I'm very happy to be able to talk to the world in this way.
Jean, could you tell the audience what is the nature of your protest today?
Well, for the first time, we are trying a technique borrowed from the American friends. It is the loving. There's not enough love in the world. There's not enough love between different political factions. There's not enough love between, for instance, the communists and the fascists in our society. There's not enough love between the older people, the younger people. There's not enough love between me and anybody. This is the only time I get to love anybody.
Well, what is different about the method and technique? I noticed that there's a very interesting scene going under here, under the picturesque Arc de Triomphe.
Yes, you notice, for the first time, it's not only the male students who are going to be beaten up. We have today both the coeducational and the female students, and you will notice that... Oh, excuse me, a moment. Hey, Michel, comment ça va? Michel, look, I'm... Je parle sur Ali maintenant, I can talk to you. Will you go lie down, please? Go lie down, Michel. Yes, I'm sorry.
You were saying that this love-in is different from your other protests.
Yes,
how is that?
Well, I would like to explain, first of all, that the gendarmes usually attack us with a leaden cloak, you know? So for the first time, we have put in leaden blankets and stopped the traffic pattern. You see, we have led them out here, and
I think the audience is, Jean, I think the audience is really interested in knowing what is the political manifestation of this protest.
Yes, well, first of all, I want to make very clear, we are not the communists. We are not Michel, je ne peux pas. Je ne peux pas.
Where do you think, excuse me, Jean, just if I could just have a few minutes of your time, just where do you think the protest here is going to go in terms of international
youth? We want to go all the way to the top. We're going to the minister. Michel, please.
Well, that's very interesting. If we could just have the, you say the minister?
But it's starting. I've got to get over there with Michel right now. A bientôt, babes. Michel, attends.
Allons, enfants de la patrie, le jeu de
and as the sun sets over the picturesque writhing bodies under the picturesque Arc de Triomphe, we bid a picturesque farewell to Paris.
Michel.
Historical land of love and lovers.
Michel, ma belle.
Then you had the American aspect of that, which was Vietnam. I lost a lot of good friends in there. Kids I knew in 64 and 65 when I first came to America. And you come back next year and say, where's Frank? You know, gone. You know, you went to Vietnam and back in a body bag. When people feel that mad about the way they're being run, you should go to the streets. America wouldn't be here if it wasn't for people going in the streets. What did amaze me was how things turned around during the 60s. Not everybody went along at the time, but I was amazed that America managed to make that switch. I mean, not that it's all over, pal. People are people, and sometimes all they've got to do is, like, find something to hate or something to be superior to. And I can't stand that sort of stuff. And also, it's so archaic and stupid.
Fascism, wherever it appears, whether it's in Germany, the United States, the Soviet Union, or anywhere, fascism, wherever it appears, is the enemy. Fascism and Germany are not that intimately linked. I mean, fascism is a worldwide phenomenon. It can hit, you know, a bunch of baboons swinging in the trees, you know, in Polynesia. You know, they can all suddenly put on iron helmets and march around. Fascism is very much with us today, boys and girls, and it's still an enemy.
Señor Presidente, señores delegados, la representación de Cuba ante esta asamblea.
That is Ernesto Che Guevara speaking at the United Nations General Assembly in 1964. 3 years after that speech, Che Guevara was captured and killed by U.S.-backed forces while fighting in Bolivia. He was buried in an unmarked grave at 39. Next month marks the 50th anniversary of his death, and today, Che is a political symbol, a piece of pop art, a way to market luxury condos, and an infinitely morphable meme.
There's a show called Che for Children.
Mm-hmm. And on Channel 22, the Stock Exchange, Boston Exchanges with
that was,
Salem.
That was a spinoff from the Galloping Che, wasn't it?
Yes,
which they used
right.
to have from Canada.
But my next guest knew a different side of Che because Ernesto Guevara was his brother. Juan Martin Guevara is now 72 years old, and after years of keeping quiet about his family's history, he's opening up about it with a new book called Che, My Brother. I spoke to Juan Martin Guevara in translation from Buenos Aires. Mr. Guevara, good morning. Welcome to Day 6.
Bien, muy bien, Brent. Muy bien. Muchas gracias.
Juan Martin, so much of your book is really about trying to separate Che, the political figure, the symbol, the thinker, the human being, the writer. His portrait is recognized around the world, and that image is a powerful symbol for so many people. When you look at that famous image, what is it that you see?
I see that it's not really representative of the person that I know, neither Ernesto, my brother, nor Che Guevara. In all the photos that our family has of him, he's either smiling, or he's looking ironic, or he's looking comical. But that particular photo, people have to understand, it was a very unique moment. The CIA had just sabotaged a ship in Havana Harbor known as Le Cure. An explosion had happened. Multiple deaths had happened. It was a grim moment. And his face looks grim and hard.
Dura una cara como esa que aparece en la foto, ¿no?
But as his little brother, then, you remember Ernesto as being ironic and comical? Is that how you would characterize him?
Sí, sí.
Yes. Being a member of our family, you had to be like that. There had to be jokes, humor, looking for the other person's vulnerable spot so that you could cause a reaction. Irony and wordplay was our bread and butter in our family. And that is something that he kept with him throughout his life.
Juan Martín, for many years after his death, you and your family did not speak publicly about Che. But the question really is why? Why did members of the family decide they would not speak about their very famous and extremely revered brother and son?
Bueno, en realidad, mi padre escribió un libro que se llama Mi Hijo Che, así que él sí habló.
The truth is, my father wrote a book called My Son, El Che. So he did talk about it. My mother died in 1965, so she died not even knowing where he was, whether he was alive or dead. The rest of us, we never really agreed not to talk about Che. But you have to understand, I was in prison. So for me to go announcing that I was Che Guevara's brother was not such a good idea, being in prison under the military junta. Others of my siblings fled the country in fear. There was bombings, shootings at my home because of this being Ernesto Guevara, Che Guevara's family. I decided much later, in 2009, I understood that it's good to talk and that I needed to talk.
Muchos años después, entendí que sí era bueno hablar.
Yours is a remarkable family, and it's incredibly funny when you write about your family. In some cases, your father was a character.
I have here a paper that says Germany surrenders from 1918, and is bringing up father. And let me read you the bringing up father.
Mayor, just a second. Let me turn back the hands of time here. Right. Mayor, drop your LaGuardia. Here he is, reading the news and the views.
Open your papers, kids. To Monday, November 11th, 1918, the San Francisco Examiner. Now, up at the top, it's bringing up father. In the first panel here, you've got Maggie reading a letter to Jiggs, who's seated down. He doesn't have his shoes on, as usual, and he's smoking his little butt of a cigar, and he's in his underwear. And she says,
"Here's a letter from our son in France."
And then he says,
"His next letter will be from Berlin."
And in the next box there, he's got the letter and is looking kind of puzzled, and Maggie's saying,
"He's just like you. I told him to wear his heavy socks and woolens in the trenches and keep bundled up."
Now, in the next caption box here, she's writing furiously at the desk, and he's standing kind of disgruntled in his stocking feet a little off to the side, and she's saying,
"I write him again. He must do as I tell him."
To which Jig says,
"Why do you keep nagging at the boy?"
Then Maggie really is shocked at this. She's got little lines coming out of her head and the pen suspended in midair, like out in space. We don't know about that yet. And Jiggs is real, real mad there. And he's all scrunched up. He's got his hand in his pocket. And he says,
"Why don't you let him enjoy the war?"
You say at one point in the book that we were all a little cracked. You were 15 years younger than Che. Can you describe a little bit about your early relationship, what it was like to be his little brother?
He was not your traditional big brother, the one that would step in as an authority figure when dad wasn't around. He was more of a comrade, of a friend, somebody that I would play with. We would go to the soccer game together. In Spanish, there's a word, compinche, you know, a buddy, a pal, somebody that's with you at all times, your sidekick.
I want to ask you about what it means to carry the name Guevara, not only for your generation, not only for your siblings and your family, but for Che's family as well. Can it be a burden to be a member of Che's family, to share the name Guevara?
Some people have suggested that I lived in the shadow of what Che Guevara had been. I always say no. I live in the light of what Che Guevara is. Obviously, it's not the same as being John Smith's brother, especially after he went from being Ernesto to being Che, but burden or weight, I wouldn't call it that.
Otro tipo de relación con la gente.
George's father was struck in the face by a blast of steam and lost his eyesight.
What a blast!
He retired from the pits, and George supported him for the remainder of his life.
You can put me down now, George.
Juan Martin, I was thinking, when I was thinking about Burden Extracted, I was thinking about your experience later in life, many years after Che died, when you were a political prisoner in Argentina. That experience deepened your connection to Che's philosophy. And yet there are political prisoners in Cuba as we speak. How do you think they feel about Che's ideas?
Bueno, ahí no hay una pregunta.
I understand what you're saying. I hear it clearly. I've heard it from others. But I want to just say clearly, there are no political prisoners in Cuba.
There are people who would dispute that. You know that, Juan Martin. There are people who feel that Cuba has imprisoned many people unjustly. But let me move beyond that. When you were imprisoned by the Argentinian junta, do you believe that your life was spared because you were related to Che Guevara? Or do you believe that the imprisonment itself was a result of the name that your family bore?
Bueno, eso, como estas cosas no se escriben.
Who knows? I mean, these things are not written. Those responsible for making decisions about life and death, who knows? I mean, the good thing is that I'm alive and that I can keep speaking about it now and that hopefully others will listen.
Lo bueno es que entonces lo que yo digo otros lo pueden escuchar.
But how did surviving that period of your life change or alter your relationship to the things that your brother did and said?
No, para mí,
for me, he remained somebody who marked a road to the future. I believe the world is going very badly. And if anybody tells you that things in the world are going well, it's probably because it's going well for them. But Che believed also that the world was going in a bad way. And his work, his writings, were trying to make the world a better place. And there are others like Che who have done the same, who have lived their lives in a way to try to improve the world. And we need that. We need more of that in this world now.
You talk about a very controversial period in the book, and this was after the revolution, when Che oversaw the trials and executions of the people who supported the Batista regime. You went to one of those trials, and you write about it and say that you found it troubling. How do you reconcile the atmosphere at those trials with Che's ideals?
Bueno, por un lado, el Che, o sea,
first of all, it's important for me to say, was not in charge of those trials and executions. There was lawyers on both sides. There was a jury. Che was neither one of those. I was interviewed recently in Germany about this very question. And what I said was, in Germany, when the war was over, the Nuremberg trials took place. There was lawyers. There was judges. And in the end, there were death sentences and executions. So were those judges wrong? Why is there seem to be a different measure for Europe than there is for other parts of the world?
But
what was it that you found so disturbing about the atmosphere of the trial that you attended?
That trial was the only trial of many trials that was actually made public. And it was the atmosphere that bothered me very much. This was done in a stadium. There were more than 5,000 members of the general public present. And to see that person who was being judged, who was clearly an assassin and a murderer. But to see that person surrounded by the mob, it was disturbing. And I was not the only one that was disturbed by it. And so much so that it ended up being the only trial that was public. After that, they decided never again, only the judges, the lawyers, and those being held responsible for crimes.
Pero no el público en general.
I'd like to take one too, Dad.
Scared, son? Don't be. I love you at times like this.
I know, Dad, but how can you be an... I mean, I still don't see how you can be my defense lawyer and the people's prosecutor all at the same time.
Easy, son. This way I can personally see that you're persecuted to the full extent of the laws.
That's my dad.
George LeRoy, tire biter, please take the stand.
Does he mean me?
Now stand tall, Porge. There's no...
This is a line of Indians leaving Rancho Malario to make room for you. Here's the beautiful Trail of Tears golf course.
This is Carolyn Presky. You've sold out. Now let's see just what you bought on this, your third day on Hawaiian Sellout. Bob, what's Miss Presky's heap so far?
Right, Jack. So far, a complete broken set of color bars for Mrs. B's new home, some leveled mountain skis and water rollers for that fun-filled open season, an unattached Grid 5 stand-up reheater with a smoke window, and now...
300 full pounds of Chef Antoine's Southern Fried Glimpse, toasted to golden perfection, cubed, reheated, and returned to water before you're ready, Miss B. And the inside, well, look at that. It's just as lovely. Two shelves where none are needed. And look at that. Close the door and the light stays on. Well, how do you feel, Miss Presky?
Sick.
Ah, well, you can afford it now, love. But like the good book says, there are bigger deals to come.
Was that the line you took, Lieutenant?
I can't.
Well, go ahead. You have to answer this one.
I can't remember.
Calm down, my boy. Our entire defense rests on you not...
kindly instruct your client to stop acting, and you could take a couple of lessons in military toughness yourself.
Yes, and everything went black.
General, I must insist this man is in no condition to replay that.
Well, I can see that, Major. Will the recording sergeant read the scene back to him?
Yes, sir. Alvarado, sir, what are we going to do, man? Matetsky, take it easy, Lieutenant. Tirebiter, we're going to go out there and cut. I can't say it. I'm sorry, but I zip, beep.
Can you remember now, Lieutenant?
Surrogate General Klein, sir. When I signed my contract with you, I fully intended to fulfill its terms with honor, sir. But you never told me I had to go out there and kill anybody.
Lieutenant, we will not tolerate the use of prohibited language in this court's martials. The accursed will be advised of the absence of his rights under the Secret Code of Military Toughness and will act accordingly.
Oh, gee whiz, I'm sorry.
I suppose it's we parents should be sorry, Judge. We failed somewhere. We didn't raise this boy to use language like that.
Now, it's not our fault anymore, Mr. Prosecutor. Call the next witness.
What do you think I ought to call him, Judge?
I don't know. We don't have a name for him. He never went to school.
Well, then, the people calls to the stand, you.
Don't point at me, Daddy. I'll cut off your finger.
No. You, the second man from the rear over there. You, the man with no shoes.
Who? Me?
You.
Mudhead? Oh, golly. Yeah.
You promise to covet property, propriety, plurality, surety, security, and not hurt the state? Say what?
What?
Take your stand.
Now then, Mr. Head.
Hi, Mr. Tirebiter. You know me.
Do you know the defendant?
Do I know Porgy?
And you spend all your free time with him?
Sure, except when he's in school.
So you don't go to school?
Heck no. I'm 30 years old.
But you were in school, weren't you?
Never.
And with your friend Porgy.
No.
Last night.
Oh, you mean commie martyrs.
Communist martyrs high school, exactly.
Well, yeah, of course. Porgy had to find out where they were hiding more science, or he couldn't get out.
Or he couldn't get out. He admits it, he was trying to get out.
Isn't everybody?
Yes, to get out in times of declared emergency.
What emergency?
Well, there you are, Judge Poop. Youth here doesn't seem to know about the disappearance of the old school.
But that's what Porgy was looking for!
If you don't answer the question, young man, we're going to have to gag you.
What question?
Gag him.
Who was that lady I saw you with last night?
Oh, that was no lady. That was Bottles.
Bottles?
You write in this book that we need to take Che off his pedestal. What do you mean by that?
Los mitos es inútil luchar.
Myths are terribly tough to fight against. The way I approach it is try to humanize the man. And you do that by providing content, by giving substance and content to the man. That way you bring his feet hopefully closer to earth. You have more understanding of who he really was, and then perhaps an opportunity that you might want to follow who he was.
Nadie puede imitar a alguien que está tan alto allí.
I want to ask you about October 9th, 1967, the day that your brother, Ernesto Che Guevara, was killed. He had been reported dead several times before that. Your family received the news a few times, several times, that he was dead. How did you know on October 9th that this was true?
Bueno, yo trabajaba en ese momento.
At that time, I was working with a company that distributed milk in the morning, and it was the 10th of October, 67, that I would have seen the newspaper, the headline that Che Guevara was dead, and then the photo. And when I looked at that photo the first time of his body, I said, that's him. Then we all gathered, looked at the photo, and as you might expect, there were some doubts. Some people in our family were saying, no, it's not him. And then my brother, Roberto, was the one that was chosen to go to Bolivia to identify our brother's body. He went to Valle Grande, he went to La Paz, but there was no way at that point that the military in Bolivia was going to show him the body. There was no body. They said it had been incinerated, that it was simply not going to happen. So there was no way of knowing. Roberto came back. Soon after that, we heard word from Havana directly that it was 100% confirmed that Ernesto Che Guevara had died.
Seguros de que sí era Ernesto.
What was it about the photo that convinced you when other family members did not believe it?
There was something about the photo. There was something I can't explain, instinctual in me, that said, yes, that's him.
Che will always be the martyred son of the Cuban Revolution. Cuba is in the midst of a dramatic transformation now, and October will be the 50th anniversary of his death. Do you think Che's ideas will be part of Cuba's future?
Yes, and Cuba's history is part of humanity, like the history of the USA, which I know is going through a lot of problems right now. You know, these are all parts of history. You can't parcel off history. Cuba, Che, will be part of the history of humanity. I think Che's ideas will continue to influence across the globe.
Good evening. Tonight is indeed a unique occasion in the history of television. We are very privileged and deeply honored to have with us in the studio Karl Marx, founder of modern socialism and author of the Communist Manifesto. Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov, better known to the world as Lenin, leader of the Russian Revolution, writer, statesman, and father of modern communism. Che Guevara, the Cuban guerrilla leader, and Mao Zedong, leader of the Chinese Communist Party since 1949. And the first question is for you, Karl Marx. The Hammers. The Hammers is the nickname of what English football team? The Hammers? No, well, bad luck there, Carl. So we're going to you, Che. Che Guevara. Coventry City last won the FA Cup in what year? No? I'll throw it open. Coventry City last won the FA Cup in what year? No, well, I'm not surprised you didn't get that. It was, in fact, a trick question. Coventry City have never won the FA Cup. So, with the scores all equal now, we go on to our second round, and Lenin, it's your starter for 10. Teddy Johnson and Pearl Carr won the Eurovision Song Contest in 1959. What was the name of the song? Teddy Johnson and Pearl Carr's song of the 1959 Song Contest? Anybody? No? Yes, Mao Zedong.
Sing, little buddy.
Yes, it was indeed. Well challenged. Well, now we come on to our special gift section. The contestant is Karl Marx, and the prize this week is a beautiful lounge suite. Now, Karl has elected to answer questions on the workers' control of factories. So here we go with question number one. Are you nervous? The development of the industrial proletariat is conditioned by what other development?
The development of the industrial bourgeoisie.
Yes, yes, it is indeed. You're on your way to your lounge suite, Karl. Question number two. The struggle of class against class is a what struggle? A what struggle?
A political struggle.
Yes, yes. One final question, Karl, and the beautiful lounge suite will be yours. You gonna have a go? You're a brave man. Karl Marx, your final question. Who won the cup final in 1949?
The workers control the means of production. The struggle of the urban proletariat.
No, it was in fact Wolverhampton Wanderers who beat Leicester 3-1.
In World Forum today, Karl Marx, Che Guevara, Lenin and Mao Zedong. Next week, four leading heads of state of the Afro-Asian nations against Bristol Rovers at Molyneux.